What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Lawyer You Know podcast. I'm your host, attorney Peter Tragos, and on this podcast, we break down the trials and cases you care most about so that you can understand how the American criminal and civil justice system works. We try to make sure you understand your rights by answering your questions as, well, a lawyer that you know. So we want to walk you through this process, and we can do it together. Make sure you get in the comments or in the chats to ask the questions that have been burning in your minds. And while this is not legal advice, it's always exciting. So buckle up for another episode of The Lawyer You Know. What's up? What's up? What's up? We are here to talk Alec Murdoch yet again. The only thing hard about that short intro is I have to have myself like on the screen immediately. Usually I have 30 seconds to like get myself together before we start, but now I feel like I literally walked in. I was at the conference till 7:55. The speaker was still going. Pretty interesting topic. Actually, it was dealing with experts, which, you know, a lot of you would find interesting. And we talked through kind of some of the issues we're dealing with currently cross-examining these experts. We saw some of that in the trial today. So we'll talk through what these experts actually proved for the defense, if they were beneficial. But we're going to start out with the question on everyone's mind right now. Will Alec Murdoch testify in his own defense? He is a trial lawyer who plays on people's emotions. He's manipulative. He gives great closing arguments. He's very convincing. He is very much the type that goes above and beyond his presentation, knows how to connect with the jury, and would seem like the perfect person to testify in his own defense. Now, we've talked about the potential issues that may come with that, but that's going to be the beginning of our show today. But before we get there, hit that like button, subscribe to our page if you haven't already. We're still growing. We're still bringing more people into this community. We're still discussing this thing gracefully together, discussing where we stand, understanding different viewpoints, diverse ways of thinking about this and seeing this. I see so many comments about, you know, I was either on opiates or knew somebody, family member. This is how I act. I lost a family member. This is how I responded. And people are really giving good perspective on the different ways to look at this from different perspectives. I'm from the South. I handle guns a lot or know my way around hunting and these long guns, and I'm 5'2" and I'm 6'4". Just a lot of different people discussing this stuff together. And the only way we can really continue this conversation and continue discussing it like this is if we all are respectful to each other, enjoy the conversation, enjoy the education, even around very difficult topics. So let's get into it here. The beginning of the day, as the judge said, anything before we bring the jury? And the answer was yes. And we start the discussion on what would cross-examination look like. And on this channel, we've talked about how I didn't think he was going to testify. I didn't think that he necessarily needed to. Their entire theory of the case is the state cannot prove that he did this. The lack of evidence, the bad investigation, that's the defense's best theory. However, he's given so many statements. He's talked about how he's cooperated. He's talked about how he's been an open book. And while the attorney general can't point out the fact that Murdoch not testifying is somehow his first step in not cooperating, so I would worry about that a little bit if I'm the defense, that, you know, you've been preaching he's cooperating, he's an open book, he's ready to do whatever they need him to do. And to me, that is a fear, but I think they have a strong enough case, obviously, as we've discussed it. And as far as a lack of evidence goes versus them trying to prove something and trying to prove this case and prove his point of view and prove what he says, I think there's more of a chance that he takes the stand and the jury hates him, and that he takes the stand and the AG's office goes in on all the lies and the deceit and the manipulation, and the lack of care for even those closest to him. That's what I would be worried about. We're going to talk more about that. We are going to post a poll question if it's not posted already. Do you think he will testify? Because there seems like there have been a lot of reports, more than just whispers, very loud voices saying he is going to testify. I have thought he was not going to testify the whole time. I would advise him not to. Of course, he's the client and it's his right to waive if he wants to waive it. So if he testifies, I think it's going to be something that he wants to do. So let's listen to the discussion between the defense, the AG's office, and the judge about what cross-examination will look like. Because I think this was smart by the defense. Because if they could limit it, then that would make it a lot more likely. And that's one of the reasons I thought he shouldn't testify, is because of all these other crimes and all these other bad acts. That's why I thought he wouldn't testify. But if they could get those to go away, then maybe it'd be more likely that he testifies. So let's listen to this discussion together. Back it down to 1.5 speed.
Mr. Griffin has a matter he wishes to address the court.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Your Honor. We are discussing with Mr. Murdoch his right to testify or not testify. And one of the issues that has come up is the scope of cross-examination that the state would be permitted to go into should he testify. And the basic rule is when the defendant takes a stand, he waives his Fifth Amendment privilege as to matters to which he testifies on direct and relevant matters subject to cross-examination. Your Honor has let in, over our objection, evidence under 404B of financial misconduct. And what we're asking is for an order excluding the state from being able to question Mr. Murdoch in cross-examination matters related to the financial crimes that's been put before the court under Rule 404B, if we don't testify about those on direct examination.
So what he wants is, you can't ask Alec about any of the financial crimes. I have no idea how they would do direct and how they would do cross without wading into those waters. And CeCe, I'm kind of thinking the same thing here. The defense is, if the defense is ahead in any juror's mind, let's put it that way. If they are ahead, this can only hurt them. If they are behind, I find it very unlikely for these people, for these jurors that are watching this trial, if they already have Murdoch convicted and think he did it and think he's the bad guy, I do not think him testifying is going to change that. More likely, they're just going to double down. So I don't see how this helps him, but the defense wants the judge to tell the state that they cannot go into the financial crimes if he takes a stand. I'll reserve my thoughts on this request until after we hear some argument.
We need a ruling from the court at some point in time today before. We're asking that we be able to advise him of what the state will be permitted to go into on cross-examination should he choose to testify. Adequately advise him and for him to adequately waive his right and his Fifth Amendment privilege and testify or not. And that's what we're asking.
Would you like me to review?
So they're basically saying like, oh, well, we just need to know so that we can advise him appropriately. And so we can tell him exactly what rights he's waiving. And so we can explain this process to him. It's like, he's a solicitor. He's a lawyer. He knows these rights. You're just trying to limit cross-examination. That's really what you're trying to do. But they're couching it in, we just want to properly advise him of his rights. We don't want an appellate issue judge.
With him at this time, his right to testify or not testify?
Not at this point in time, Your Honor. We have to, we're trying to get an understanding from the court as to the parameters of the waiver of the privilege. Is he waiving, if he testifies about the murders, is he then subject to cross-examination about the financial crimes? That's what we're asking.
All right. Mr. Waters.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. First of all, obviously the general rule is that cross is generally wide open, and that goes for a defendant who testifies. Your Honor, Rule 611B on the scope.
That's correct. That is generally the rule, and I'm going to slow it down because he likes to speak a little quicker. He's more our pace. He's right. That's the whole point of why it is such a big deal and such a big question as to whether or not criminal defendants want to testify, because generally cross is wide open. And you can get screwed left, right, and center if you are a criminal defendant, especially if you have other charges pending. So that's what he has to worry about here. Patrick, what's up? Welcome back in. New short intro. Glad you noticed. So he's right, and he's going to continue to argue.
scope of cross-examination expressly says that a witness may be cross-examined on any matter relevant to any issue in the case. And, of course, Your Honor has ruled through 404 and 403 the financial matters independently relevant. But the rule goes on to further say, including credibility. So even if that...
So, Trish, see, he answers your question. Subject matter specific? No, it's not subject matter specific. You are waiving your Fifth Amendment right to take the stand. Now, there could be certain scenarios where you take the stand in a criminal trial and you could still invoke your Fifth Amendment right on something that's not necessarily connected to the case. But Waters is right. The judge has already determined that this financial stuff is relevant to this case. So it would make no sense that they wouldn't be able to cross-examine him on this. It would make absolutely no sense. And then secondarily, crimes of moral turpitude, other bad acts. They have the signed confession, basically, that he stole the money from Satterfield. So at the very least, that would come in. There's no way you're getting around these financial crimes at this point in the case based on the judge's other rulings.
Not happened. These matters, which go right to the heart of the credibility and frankly, the extensive dishonesty of this defendant, would be relevant if he took the stand anyway, regardless of the 404. So independently under that rule of the credibility aspect, it would be admissible under Rule 611B. But again, Your Honor has ruled these matters as relevant in the case, and so that clearly within the scope of cross. Your Honor, citing State v. Gilbert and Gleaton, 273 SC 690, they said right there, as I think the defense recognized, when the accused takes the stand on his own behalf, he waives his privilege against compulsory self-incrimination and must answer all proper questions. Your Honor, Taylor v. State, which I believe may have been overruled on other grounds, but 258 SC 369, when the appellate elected to testify, he waived his right against self-incrimination and became subject to cross-examination like any other witness.
And he's right. That is the general rule. And these last two comments back to back about whether judges can put guardrails on, whether he's going to let the prosecutor go down every rabbit hole, I'm basing this on the judge's prior rulings. I think he's already ruled this stuff is relevant. So why would he say now that you can't cross-examine him on it? I don't think there's a chance that he says they can't ask him about the financial crimes.
And then finally, citing the U.S. Supreme Court, Brown v. U.S. 356 U.S. 148, it says, it's talking about a defendant in a criminal case. It says if he takes the stand and testifies in his own defense, his credibility may be impeached and his testimony assailed like any other witness. And the breadth of his waiver is determined by the scope of relevant cross-examination. He has no right to set forth to the jury all the facts which tend in his favor without lying himself open to a cross-examination on those facts. Those are the general and well-established rules, Your Honor, and they're particularly relevant in this case. And so we believe that those financial of this particular matter and authorized by the rules in the case law.
Mr. Griffin.
Yeah, just
Janet, as we have seen so often throughout this case, I think you are exactly right in what the defense will do if this evidence comes in. We have seen so many times and so many arguments, the defense tries to keep something out, they object, they pound the table, they've even asked for a mistrial. But once the evidence comes in, they use it as if it is their evidence and they use it within their theory of the case, which is why I think it's pretty good lawyering on their part. So I think they want to try to keep this stuff out if they can. But if they can't, I think you are spot on. And I think that is exactly what they are going to do.
Briefly, Your Honor, with regard to credibility, I mean, the rules are pretty strict as to what evidence of criminal conduct can be used to impeach a witness's credibility. And there are limited to convictions. And that's Rule 609. Your Honor has let the financial evidence in under theory of motive, and you've done a 403 weighing test. And Your Honor, I think when you get to cross-examination of a defendant, I think Your Honor has discretion under Rule 403 to prohibit the state from further inquiry.
Sure. He does have discretion to do that, but it wouldn't make any sense based off the prior rulings you just referenced. That's the problem. And Amanda, I'm having a hard time understanding when or about what a defendant can assert Fifth Amendment on the stand and when they can't. I was under the impression that anyone could take the Fifth at any time. No, this is the exact point. We are talking about in a criminal defense trial. the criminal defendant is waiving their Fifth Amendment right not to speak when they take the stand. It's different than a civil case because the other side can force you on the stand. Here, they cannot force you on the stand, but you can't get up there and say everything you want on direct and then plead the Fifth on cross. If you get up there, you are waiving your Fifth Amendment right generally. If they go off into something completely outside the scope of this case, completely irrelevant, completely tangential, completely remote in time, then you can object. Then you can go to the up to the bench. You can talk to the judge, and there's a potential chance, but generally you are waiving the Fifth if you take the stand in a criminal defense case as a criminal defendant.
This case on the...
So there is a spot where the sound goes out. I have no idea why. I'm going to skip ahead. It does come back.
Aspects of truthfulness and untruthfulness, which this clearly goes to, as well as 608C, which talks about bias, prejudice, and any motive to misrepresent. And again, we're not just talking about purely dishonesty and credibility, which I think is alone more than enough. We're also talking about examination on issues that are specifically relevant to this particular case based on the 404 ruling.
Rule 607, Rule 608, particularly the portion of 608C, evidence of bias, prejudice, or any motive to misrepresent may be shown to impeach the witness, either by examination of the witness or by evidence otherwise deduced. Rule 611 and 609 also addresses the issue. I am not going to issue an order in advance limiting the scope of cross-examination. Any objectionable matter must be addressed as the evidence is presented and not based on any advance ruling by the court.
Basically, just like he did with the other motive stuff, he's like, I'm not answering that question right now. I'm not going to limit it. If you think it's objectionable or it shouldn't come in, then we'll deal with it when it comes in, which is just not helpful at all for them. But, you know, what do you expect? I think they know it's coming in. Emily Ward, what value add is there for Alex testifying? I really don't see one, basically because, Sharon, this is why I don't see a value add.
Your Honor, the request for the ruling is not an evidentiary ruling. It's the scope of his privilege. And so would he be permitted to assert the Fifth, for example, if they're permitted to ask questions such as they intend to on cross? And that's,
I think you're getting advisory opinions about the evidence and the scope of cross-examination, the scope of his privilege. I'm willing to review with him the scope of his privilege against self-incrimination, if that's what you're referring to.
We would certainly need to have that colloquy at some point at the end of the day, perhaps. But
for the court to issue some blanket order limiting the scope of cross-examination, that's unheard of to me.
Again, Your Honor, I'm not. The question is the scope of the waiver of his privilege when he gets on that witness stand. That's what we're asking for. Not an evidentiary rule.
Well, Mr. Waters has some cases there.
Basically, it's another day, but I'm not making this decision right now. And I think the judge is right, but I think he's also going to make, I'm not going to say the right decision, but the consistent decision to allow them to get into that stuff now when he takes the stand. Nick Bro, hey Peter, get your lemon perfect water ready. I emailed them with a good response. I sent you an email also. I have to check this out. Nick, bro, did you seriously do this? That's hilarious. Oh man, I'm sending you a case if they end up sponsoring a segment here, a rapid fire question segment or something. Pete, please confirm AM cannot afford bond. At this point, there is no bond. I don't know if he can afford the bond if it just becomes a financial crimes if he's not guilty here. Need a poll. If the judge did not allow financial crime, how would people vote based on the state's evidence? We'll see. Betsy, question. Did AM's team file a motion for change of venue? It does seem like a tough place for him to get a fair trial. I am not sure. A lot of that talk was in the civil case. If a hung jury, do you think the state will retry him? I don't know. I mean, I don't think they should have tried him in the first place. I think they should go get him for the financial crimes. And somebody else asked a question. Are we sure he's going to get time for the financial crimes? But I can't find that now. T-Mac, what do you think the chances are for a hung jury? I think the chances are higher than your average case. I'll put it that way. Melanie, high Uhtred, it seems like requesting a speedy trial is an advantage. What do you think? Only in certain cases. Thanks for the lives every night. I love them. Only in cases where you feel like the state is unprepared. Because usually, like if we're talking in Koberger in the Idaho case, they're screwed. The state's way more prepared than them. So demanding a speedy trial would not help them. All right. I can't get into too many questions now because we have not even gotten to the first witness yet, who was Mark Ball. Okay. So Mark Ball, he was another lawyer, yet another lawyer with the Murdoch firm. And I'm just going to call it the Murdoch firm to make it easy. Been there 34 years, showed up the night this all happened. He was the one that noticed the water coming down off of the, hold on. Will Murdoch testify? 64% no, 36% yes. So we're still leaning heavier towards no. But every day it seems a little bit more like he will, but I'm still saying he should not testify. And if he does, it'll be interesting to see whether it comes off good or not. How is he going to explain? Now, here's the thing. If he does testify, it gives him the opportunity to explain how he was at the kennels at 844. That's the one value add that I can think of. Okay. Mark Ball, he thought it was disrespectful. It pissed him off when the water was going down onto the sheet, contaminating the crime scene and Paul's body, and the blood was washing down. And Alec kept saying, look what they did, look what they did. He was concerned immediately with the poor investigation by law enforcement, which I thought was interesting. He had convos with law enforcement about Paul getting threats, so he confirmed that. I thought he was overall pretty good for the defense. It became clear later he hates Alec Murdoch and is pissed off at him and doesn't know him and feels like he's a total fraud, which a lot of people probably do, and I think that's a totally fair representation. A large group of people went into the house. A large group of people were doing different things, were helping him. He got the call the next morning. He came and cleaned up. They told him the crime scene was clear, which is just crazy to me. He found a blackout shell that Sled had missed. I mean, this quick. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning, and we know this happened 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night they got there. So less than 12 hours, and people are already cleaning up. That's why Blanca and all the stuff inside the house, where the pots and pans were, where the shirt was, which Buster explained, that means almost nothing to me because Sled released this crime scene. Sled didn't do their job already in time. And I hear a lot of people saying, well, it's because they wanted to help out Murdoch. They wanted to help Murdoch get off. And that's fine. If you think that's the truth, and maybe that is the truth, that's fine. If that's what you think, and that may even well be the truth, but they should not win with that excuse. Law enforcement and the state should not win because they purposely botched the investigation because they wanted to help a brother out in the good old boys club. You should lose this case, regardless of what you think of Alec Murdoch. You should lose this case if you did not do it right. You did not hold your burden. You did not gather evidence the appropriate way, and you didn't prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt. You don't get a free pass because you chose to not investigate the case properly. One guy's opinion. He looked in the feed room. There was still stuff everywhere, ammo. His testimony for sure drove home how embarrassing the investigation was. The guns were moved around the day before. He took pictures of CD Rose's vehicle, had no license plate. He thought it looked sketchy. Nothing else really came of that. He saw a cooler with a bunch of beer cans around it. He thought somebody went boating and then dropped it off. He confirmed they in the clip, you know, whatever credence you give that, I don't give it much. Boat case. So here was an interesting theme of the day. And I think one of the most important themes of the day, Alec was way more worried about the criminal charges against Paul than he was about the civil charges against him. More on that later with another witness who I actually thought was the best witness of the day. Surprisingly, I didn't expect him to be. He found out about evidence of the financial crimes. He thought he knew him. In September, he figured out he didn't know him. Paul was demonized by the boat case. Great family man outwardly, but I don't really know him. On cross, Waters gets up and he's fiery and he's quick. He's pretty good at hiding who he was, wasn't he? Outward appearance, you trusted him. He was a good law partner, family man, etc. You did talk about what happened that night. He told you three times. It was almost like Peter denying Christ three times. It's like he told you three times. He lied to you three times. He told you he wasn't at that kennel three times, didn't he? Drove that home, and I thought that was a great point by Waters. He's lying to everybody. He's lying to his friends. Why lie? If you left right when it happened, why not throw that out there as how crazy that is? I just left before this happened. It could have been me. Those are the statements he should have been saying, right? I think a lot of you in the chat would have found that a lot more believable. I was just down there. This could have been me. It should have been me. It was probably somebody coming for me. Those kind of statements, I think, would have gone a lot further. 4th of July, I thought Waters stepped in it a little bit. Was he ever worried about a safety? He said 4th of July, he did have a bag with a pistol in it. That's unusual for him to start carrying protection on his person. And then again, more good stuff out of this witness when he said, you know, that's the Murdoch boys. They're always leaving stuff everywhere. He left that bag with the pistol on it. And, you know, he left another gun at my house. They were leaving guns everywhere. That's just kind of what they did. Then he, you know, went into, again, the financial stuff and how he ruined his good name, his good law firm. They had to change everything. And how Murdoch's whole family was so connected with the solicitor's office. And that's probably why the investigation sucked. It's kind of like Waters was almost trying to get the jury to pick up on that. This is the reason the investigation sucked. But in order to do that, it almost felt like he had to admit the investigation sucked, which I don't think he really wanted to do that. Sled was respectful that night. And what's this guy's name again? Hall? What's his name? Ball. He was like, yeah, maybe a little too respectful. And I agree with him there. It's unusual for Murdoch to go anywhere without his phone. I don't think he got many points there. They went in stealing money, how cunning he was. They weren't going to fudge the books for him. Oh, a really good point by Waters on cross. This witness got blood on his shirt and his pants just by cleaning up the feed room. Yet Alec is spotless, basically. So again, they've kind of switched. They've switched gears, which I think they had to do. All the lawyers, including this guy, basically knew the roadside incident was BS as soon as they showed up, which I think is pretty telling. Then on redirect, an interesting argument, and I thought this lawyer for the first time looked like he wanted to make it seem like the firm was a little more altruistic than they were. He's like, Alec had cases coming in and money coming in. Every lawyer would. If I were to stop today, lots of cases we've already signed would still be money coming into the firm. And yes, it's the firm's cases. And he argued about the firm's money, firm's cases. But Alec brought that in. And over $2 million, it sounded like, went toward paying back the clients from those fees. They paid back $10 million, but he said some of that was insurance. So if we have some insurance and $2 million from Alec's fees, that cuts in a lot to what we've been hearing about all this money the partners have been shelling out. Now, I don't care if I had to pay one penny for some scumbag. I'm not even talking about Alec Murdoch, okay? Talking about somebody else. This is just a general illustration. For some scumbag that wants to steal money from clients or steal money from the firm, generally, not talking about anybody specifically, I would be pissed about spending one red cent. So I understand why he's pissed off about this and annoyed about this. Alec Murdoch was accused of interfering with the Bowdoin case. He basically said, I'd do the same thing. I'd advise people I go into daddy mode. But one part of this redirect where I was like, oh no, Murdoch's team just stepped in it when he talked about how, you know, he felt like he knew Murdoch and what he would do, but then everything changed in September. Let's watch a couple of minutes of this together, because I thought this was really powerful.
I would ask him something. I remember him asking me one time when he was going through his, he had a stack of sympathy cards, and he said, should I send them all back a note? And I said, Alec, people don't send you sympathy cards to, you know, get a note back from you. There's no way in the world you can do that.
And he was terminated from the firm and you were concerned about perhaps what he might do, did you ever think maybe he'll go kill a family member? Did that ever cross your mind?
I think Jimmy G expected him to say no, but he also did seem kind of nervous when he was asking, and he does not say no.
No, you talking about when we terminated him?
Yes, sir.
By then, Maggie and Paul had been killed.
Well, he had family out there.
He did. I never thought of any of that. Listen, when September the 2nd hit, it changed everything that I knew about Alec.
So right when he said that, I was like, oh boy, I don't think that's what you were expecting. This is very, very bad for you, the defense team. But Then I think he gives them from the witness stand in evidence what they have been trying to argue since the financial crimes came in, what I semi-sarcastically tweeted. And this was, I think, the single most important line of the day or minute or two that we're about to listen to. So focus up here. He just said, did you think he was going to kill a family member? And he's like, well, honestly, like after September 2nd or 3rd or whatever it was, I don't feel like I knew Alec anymore. Which seems like it's going to be bad, but it turns around here and becomes really good for them.
I would have never believed that a guy that, you know, was like family would have ever stolen from me, would have stolen from his family, would have stolen from his clients or any of that. And so immediately you've got this rage, this emotion that you've got. And then on the third, we go through this whole ordeal of determination. And then the fourth, it hits and you're like, you know, did the jackass kill himself because of anything else? And then as time progressed on and you see the scope of it, I mean, I don't know the guy that after September the 3rd and leading out, I don't know who that guy is. I mean, that's not Alec that I knew.
Again, all that's still bad. So the bad lasted a little longer than I thought. All that really bad. And the jury's like, oh no, is he about to, I don't know if the jury's actually saying this, but is he about to say, yeah, I think he could have killed his family members.
Knew.
Right.
And Alec that I loved and Alec that all of us loved, you know, did he have imperfections? You bet. Did he do things that aggravated the hell out of me? You bet. But you don't kick your brother out the door because, you know, they snore at night or, you know, they've done things that aggravate you. You get past it. But when they do things that are criminal and they do things that affect not only him, but he's torn down an entire legacy, a law firm. I've spent 34 years or 33 years, I guess, in this one place. It's the only law firm that I've ever worked at. I put everything in it. It's all my children have known, my family's known, and it's gone. We had to change the name. We've had to do all these things because of his acts on this financial stuff. And when it comes to that, I'm mad as hell. I mean, you just don't know how mad I am. But on the other hand, I'm not saying that because he did that, he's done what he's accused of.
Did you catch it? I'm mad as hell about him stealing this stuff and the financial stuff and hurting the client and ruining the firm I basically spent my entire career helping build a good name for. I'm mad as hell about that. But just because he did that does not mean he did what he's accused of. That's literally what the defense is going to argue. I'm going to back it up just so we can listen to it one more time.
I am. I'm mad as hell. I know how mad I am. But on the other hand, I'm not saying that because he did that, he's done what he's accused of.
Powerful. Powerful to me. You guys can tell me if you think that's a nothing burger. Lemon Perfect is that good. Thank you, Shindog. Maybe you should email him too. Maybe all you guys should email and be like, hey, we all like this water now. I think that was the most important line of the day because that's really the point. Again, on recross, Waters gets up. He denies it three times. Next witness. Again, I thought this one was going to be kind of boring, not that big of a deal. Civil defense lawyer representing Alec Murdoch in the boat case after the prior lawyer got sick and he had to come in. Dawes Cook, I think was his name. But I thought he was the best witness of the day for them because I didn't really think, I thought the guy before had a great line, had some really great points for Murdoch, but some really bad points too. And again, makes him seem like a bad guy. He hates him. He's mad at him. He screwed a lot of people. So there was a lot of bad with him as well. We'll talk about the future witnesses and you know what I think about them. But this witness, I thought, super smart, understood what he was doing, had some fun on the stand, talked about it when he got in the suit, And basically, I just totally believed this guy. And this was something that I had no clue about. Okay. I had no clue that they were going to get into some more of the specifics. And maybe because I know a lot of this context, because this is what I do in civil litigation, but this guy I thought was so believable when he talked about how all of their time prepping for this trial and talking to the other side was about change of venue, admiralty laws. They had no concern with the financial issues. They were confident they'd be able to work them out. He had no notes and no prep on the financial stuff. Some other lawyer talked to Tinsley about it for a while, but they never actually had any issues, which is why the order came down the way that it did. He said, I never take stuff lightly. Tinsley's a good lawyer. They point him out. Can you stand up, Mr. Tinsley? He doesn't stand up. He just raises his hand. But he said the order basically was that we were going to try to get them some documents. And if we all agreed that was good, we're done. If we don't agree, then we'll have to have the hearing and the judge will determine what we have to turn over. And that's what happens all the time in these cases. And he also did a little, I've got the order right here if you'd like to read it. And he pulls out his folder, but that was a little nod to Tinsley, I think, because he was like, I got it right here if you want to see it. And then the last question on direct, did you expect any cataclysmic event to happen to Alec Murdoch on 6-10? He's like, no, no way. Then the beginning of cross, I thought was really funny. So we're just going to play a minute of it just to get a laugh. Anytime we get a chance for a laugh, I don't find this stuff happening when I'm in this series of a trial, but the vibes seem a little bit different here in South Carolina. Do I have the wrong? Oh, no, 406. So let's listen to this together.
Yes.
You did?
Number of times, yeah.
At all about the motion to compel?
No. Not that I remember. If he says I did, I couldn't deny it, but I don't remember it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right, here we go.
Like you said, the motion is meant to really worry the defendants, right? Those are your exact words, wasn't it?
Could you repeat that?
You just testified that the motion to get those financial information is meant to really worry the defendants. Those are your exact words, correct?
Always, yeah.
Okay. All right, and were you present at the trial lawyers conference when Alec Murdoch came up and towered over Mark Tinsley and said, "What's up, Bo? What are you doing?"
No, I don't get invited to that one.
Okay. I mean, it's hilarious because he's a defense lawyer. We do not let defense lawyers in here. Anybody that applies, even be a member to groups like this, their website gets checked out. They get looked into. Were they a defense lawyer? Are they a defense lawyer? How much work do they spend doing defense work? So that's what he meant by I don't get invited to those things. I think was hilarious. But then we also get some Waters theatrics, you know? I mean, it's wild. Oh, T Butterfly is a new member and throwing a big super sticker in here. Thank you, T Butterfly. Welcome to the crew. Glad you're here. We're going to enjoy this together. We're going to learn together. I hope you get in the comments a lot and we can hear what you think and talk to the chat as a group. But yeah, we'll listen to Waters a little bit more. Hey, Bo, what's this about, Bo? Trying to intimidate Mark Tinsley.
I think you did. But you weren't there when that happened, were you?
No.
You were present for when he did said that to that man right there about the boat.
Objection. I was not there.
Basis for the objection.
She doesn't have one. I'll cut to the chase. She doesn't have a basis for that objection. Okay. He was being a little bit aggressive, but his firm repped somebody else in the case. They had to take a second to get into the case. The hearing was continued because of the murders. Yes. Then on redirect, they kept trying to ask his opinion. Do you think this motion was going to get granted? The judge wouldn't allow it, even though Tinsley was allowed to testify that the judge did grant it, even though he clearly did not. And they wouldn't let this lawyer talk about whether or not he thought it was. Again, I thought that was unfair. I thought Tinsley had way more rope to testify and opine about what was going on in that case than this guy did. But I do think the whole time he talked about it, the whole time he was on the stand, it was good answers. I don't think he got tripped up at all. He also testified that if Alec Murdoch was ordered to produce those records, it would not have been immediate. It wasn't something that was going to happen on the 7th or the 10th or shortly thereafter. It was going to be months anyways, and he's absolutely right. And he did a good job, even though he answered appropriately and honestly and straightforward to Waters' questions about, well, if the judge ordered him to produce all that, he would have had to, right? And he's like, all of these documents? I mean, yes, if the judge ordered him to produce all these documents, and what he was saying was that the judge was not going to make him produce all these documents. All right. Last witness of the day, Zirsi. So this was one that I posted on Twitter about this guy and how if he does anything less than roast Sled, then I would be, I don't know if I said disappointed or it wasn't going to be a win for the defense. And I really don't think he roasted Sled enough. I don't think his testimony was any more powerful than Mark Ball earlier in the day, or I think Sled's own testimony was more damning than this guy, who was a crime scene expert, a cop expert, gathering fingerprints expert. I wrote down what he was. He's a forensic scientist, crime scene, evidence gathering, and fingerprinting and footprinting expert. Okay. And sorry, he wasn't the last witness of the day. I don't know why I said the last witness of the day. The longest witness of the day is what I should say. He talked about how to take pictures. He has a PowerPoint on how to take pictures. He's literally been an expert 200, 300, 400 times in these different specialties. Huge resume, great resume. Seemed like a really nice guy, smart guy. But basically, the biggest thing was you walk around in booties, you build these little bridges to walk on. You don't want to walk through and contaminate the scene, which, I mean, I think we all know at this point that you don't want to do that. But he took the stand again and talked about it. They failed to test important areas for fingerprints, again, stuff that we already knew. He reviewed Sled's procedural manual, and they didn't even follow their own procedures. There was much more work that could have been done. And then there was some argument and stuff at the end, but basically he said it was possible that, or the defense was asking questions about, couldn't it have produced evidence that exculpated or proved his innocence, some exculpatory evidence for Alec Murdoch. The absence of evidence is key. I thought it kind of fell flat. You guys let me know in the comments. Did you think this guy did a good job? Do you think this was a home run for the defense? Or do you think it kind of fell flat? Because I think that it fell kind of flat. Leslie, here, your comment was when I was talking about the financial stuff. Yes, I'm sure he's going to get time on the financial stuff. All right. Then on cross, it was basically focused on that he didn't review everything that was sent to him. He didn't know who Laura Rutland was, who was involved in the case. No report was requested. He said things like, you were paid to say all these law enforcement officers did a bad job. Again, we heard how much all these people were getting paid, $350 or $300 an hour, $600 to testify, 40, 50 hours working on the case. We've talked about that a lot in the past, about experts getting paid. And then you, the prosecutor again, oh, we're gonna play a little bit of this too. I forgot I had this in here. You make mistakes, right? Everybody makes mistakes. And I think his what he was trying to get there was, so Sled made some mistakes in this case, right? No biggie. Everybody makes mistakes. It's like, no, dude. No, no, no. Their mistake was worse. But let's talk about, again, some weirdness in this courtroom that Harpulian finally objected to. Yeah, it hasn't been the best. We haven't been the best spatially speaking, but let's listen to this exchange here about the objection about badgering and where this prosecutor's been standing, which all of us have found annoying and weird as well. So I wonder what the jury thinks about it. Harpulian had enough at this point. And we also get to hear how the prosecutors felt about the little gun stunt yesterday.
Or the right shoe. Therefore, a more meaningful conclusion cannot be reached. And they were limited.
It's consistent, correct? The lack of clarity make it difficult to determine a more meaningful, but it's consistent, right? They weren't eliminated. Why'd you say that?
I read the next line.
But that's item 21 and 95.
Correct.
You were trying to imply that.
No, I wouldn't do that.
You made a mistake?
No.
So he calls this guy out because he just kept reading. And he's like, you were trying to imply the jury. And then he wanted to be like, oh, you made a mistake. It's okay. People make mistakes. I don't like the way this guy lawyers. Give me Creighton Waters theatrics and getting loud and going quick and getting on the ground. Give me that over this guy all day.
Well, you said that
standing up, badgering this witness next to him. He can read it.
He can comment from back here. He's in the doorway, but again, object.
For 30.
This moment. He's been the objection is to you standing in the doorway.
He's been standing up here the whole time. He aimed a gun at us yesterday. He aimed a gun at us from here yesterday.
Everybody laughed at it. You know, I mean, again, none of us thought this was appropriate. None of us thought this was a good idea. None of us thought this should happen. But it seems like things are just different in this courtroom. Things are different. I'm telling you right now, I would pound the table like Harpulian did here. I mean, Harpulian was up there multiple times, but he was usually with his own witness, I think. But he stood there too, and now he's objecting to somebody else standing there. I would never go up there and stand like that. So I would object immediately. I would have a problem with it immediately. And that would be something that would bother me. So I understand the objection, but it doesn't look as good when, in fact, you do it yourself.
No, I don't think good for the goose, good for the gander is a rule, and I can't find it in my rule book.
Well, we're operating with...
He's basically saying, like, I don't think because he did it is an appropriate response, and he's right, but at the same time, it usually works. Let's hear what the judge says now about how we've had to move around throughout this trial.
Find it in my rule book.
Well, we're operating with limited space. Just as a matter of trial procedures, extremely unusual for counsel to stand in the locations where counsel have been standing throughout the trial. But given the limited space, that's somewhat understandable. But he has moved to the podium. Go right ahead.
And I think the judge was saying that audibly, not just for the record, but also for the jury, to make him not look, you know, bad or like he doesn't know what he's doing or like he really was badgering the witness. I think that's why he was doing that. And that's why he kind of audibly said it. Class act, beauty. Thank you so much. It's a good time. I feel like a juror when I do this with you guys. On redirect, they talk about how Worley did the photos wrong and she could have done a much better job. On recross, they were talking about how, you know, he made multiple PowerPoints and didn't give it to the state and make it look like they're trying to hide something and he kept updating it and things like that. Again, I felt like this was a win for the state because I don't feel like, I mean, I don't think he did anything for the state. It wasn't a positive for the state, but because it was not a negative for the state, I think that made it good, if that makes any sense. If it makes any sense, what I was just saying there. Hold on one second. All right. So here we go. Next witness was Miss Mixon, and Emily had this comment. Yes, she was about as good as you possibly could have been for the defense. I mean, again, she was really short, not incredibly impactful, but there was one part of her testimony that I thought was really important, changes the narrative a little bit about why Alec may have come at these weird hours and didn't come at lunchtime like he usually does, right? That's a big question. So we're going to listen to about 5 minutes of her testimony, the end of her direct, and then we're also going to watch her short cross so we can listen to tried to infer with their questions or get the jury to infer from their questions to Ms. Mixon here. So I think this was an interesting little, you know, 5 minute snippet for us to listen to together.
My medicine and your mom is very agitated. Then I said, well, first I called Chrissy. I always call Chrissy first. I couldn't get Chrissy. So then I said, well, let me call Ellie. So I called Ellie. I said, Ellie, your mom is very agitated. She is crying. I give her medicine, and I want you to come check on her later on during the day. And he said, okay, I will.
What was Ms. Libby agitated?
Because Mr. Randolph was done going to the hospital.
But, and she was, in fact, agitated, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And what do you mean by agitated?
Well, she was crying a lot, and I couldn't get her to eat, and she just, you know, she just agitated. She wouldn't.
I think that's important. I mean, I really think that's important for the timeline. She was agitated because her husband was in the hospital. She was feeling uncomfortable. She was crying. She wouldn't eat. So I called a couple different people, ended up getting Alec and told him he needs to come see his mom. And that's what he did later. And that was the plan. And that's what he told everybody, that he was going to go see his mom. But how do we know when she called Alec? I'm glad you asked, chat.
And I'm going to show exhibit this in evidence. Doug, if you could pull up the state's exhibit 520 and go to page 21, which is the Rudofsky extraction long version. Ms. Mixon, can you see there's an entry on this timeline at 358:39, Alec Murdoch receives an incoming call from Barbara Mixon. Do you see that?
Yes, sir.
You think that's when you called Alec?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And that is on June the 7th, for the record.
4 o'clock-ish. They basically talked at 4 o'clock. That's why he went after his lunchtime norm. He was at work. He had plans to go hang out with Paul, and then he went to mom's house. I mean, if you're following the defense's timeline here, I do think this is an important part. However, how reliable is it? We're going to hear here in a couple minutes.
All right, you can take that down, Doug.
I hear you, Sue.
How'd you learn about Maggie and Paul?
Well, I was sitting on my porch, and my daughter, she's in the courtroom, Shirley. Officer Stacey Lord Hope came and pulled up. Shirley, my daughter, was in the courtroom. She jumped out of her car and told me, say, Elliot found Maggie and Paul dead.
So a police officer came to your house?
Two of them. It was Stacey Lord Hope and then another one. And I said, could I go out there? And they said, no, you couldn't go out there.
Okay. And
Summer, my overall thoughts is I think she seems like a really great lady. I do think the state is going to have a pretty good, you know, one-liner about her being biased because she really loves this family. 42 years, I think she's worked for them. She said they're like her family, so she's getting up there and doing what she can to testify for him. And, you know, they raise a little suspicion with their cross, which we'll get to eventually if I ever stop talking.
Ms. Mixon, that was a Monday night, and you remember Ms. Randolph dying on a Thursday, passing on a Thursday?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that was June the 10th?
Yes, sir.
And do you remember that Mr. the funeral for Maggie and Paul was that Saturday. Do you remember the funeral service at the graveyard for Maggie and Paul on that Saturday?
Yes, sir.
And then Mr. Randolph's funeral was on that Sunday. You remember that?
Yes, sir.
And the next day was a Monday. Did you work that day?
Yes, sir.
And what time did you come to work?
8 o'clock, about five minutes to eight.
And who did you relieve?
Shelly Smith.
Okay, so Shelly would work the night shift, and you came on at 5 till 8?
Yes, sir, and released her.
And did you work that Tuesday?
Yes, sir.
And what time did you get to work?
5 minutes to 8.
And were you relieving Ms. Shelly Smith?
Yes, sir.
What about that Wednesday?
I released Shelly Smith, 5 minutes to 8.
All right. And Ms. Mixon, on any of those days, Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, when you relieved Ms. Shelly Smith, did you see a tarp opened up anywhere in Ms. Libby's house? No blue tarp on a rocking chair?
No, sir.
It's interesting.
Have you ever seen a blue tarp laid out in the house?
I've never seen a blue tarp laid out in the house.
No, it could have happened while she wasn't there, but interesting that she never saw it.
And you relieved Ms. Shelly day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of that week?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. That's all the questions I have here.
By the state.
Very briefly. Captain Davis Mixon. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. And you, sir?
Been better, been worse. We met a few weeks ago.
Yes, sir.
You remember down at the...
Yes, sir.
Not far from here.
I just want to re-highlight his goal here in this cross is to add some doubt to her statements and whether or not the most important thing she talked about, which was that phone call, whether or not that's actually true. And he kind of gives a reason, you know, she loves this family and he wants her to seem a little biased here. That's his goal in this cross.
Yes, sir.
You love Alex.
I love all of them. They like my children.
They like your family.
Yes, sir.
And we talked about that day before, briefly, you remember that day, the 7th, like he just asked you, we talked about what you did that day and who you talked to, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you didn't tell us about that conversation you had with Alex that day, did you?
No, sir.
Okay. When have they talked to you about that recently? When's the first time you told anybody about that?
I can't remember, but it's been, I can't remember. It's been a little while. I can't remember.
That's all. Thank you.
So did you catch it there? You love them? Yeah, I love them all. They're like my family. When we talked, you never told me about that conversation, did you? So she's talked to the state, and she never mentioned that at 4 o'clock, she told Alec, you need to come here because your mom's agitated. But sometime later, she told the defense that and then came and testified to it today. I thought that was his best cross-examination of the trial. I don't want to pile on because he's probably a very good lawyer, just different styles, you know? But I thought that was his best cross. He was super sweet, nice guy to her. But you know, he made me go, I don't know if I buy it. I know she wants the help. And the defense saw that call come in at 4 o'clock. And when they asked her what it was about, did they ask her what it was about? Or did they say, hey, did Alex say something like, I was here 30 to 40 minutes, like he said to Shelly, or I was wearing this shirt or whatever. Did he say that to her? You told me mom was agitated. I needed to come, right? I'd be worried about, you know, the conversation going something like that with Ms. Mixon. Okay. Then Sturgis, the director of digital forensic, LEO background, law enforcement background. They discussed about the steps, how the steps are more accurate than the distance. I thought that was potentially the most important thing that came out of this. Can't do an orientation change unless the screen is lit up. The Suburban info, I think he did a good job of kind of proving that it doesn't make sense for Alec to have thrown the phone at the Suburban, because when it was crossing the spot where the phone went, it doesn't make sense because there was no orientation change and only a little bit of movement is all that's needed for that orientation change. So I thought all that made sense. They talked about the lock screen going on, the camera coming up, you know, the phone getting locked right when Alec called. I don't think he really proved anything. I think he did poke some holes though, and doesn't seem plausible that Alec threw the phone out, which would then mean somebody else would have had to do it. On cross, they talked about different updates and trying to make it seem like he didn't know because there was this new update. Both phones locked forever around 8:49. Paul's phone died at 10:34. He probably wasn't using it. He just got him, did a good job. I thought the cross did a good job of getting it. I thought this was a good cross, by the way, by the state. Getting him to confirm a lot of the same exact things the state's witnesses said and the state's experts said. So I thought that was a good job on cross here. Phone could have been put in a vehicle, a golf cart, whatever. Very polite. Didn't go up, get in his face, didn't yell at him, no theatrics, and just made his points and did a really good job. On redirect, they explained how the iOS change didn't really matter, the raise to wake thing versus the orientation. And then on recross, he confirmed that the video from the kennel was recorded on Paul's phone at 8:44, which I thought was great. Locked that in with the defense's expert even to confirm what you guys have been arguing the whole time. So I thought all that was important. And I thought that witness, you know, didn't do much for the defense, didn't do much for the state, locked in the state's witnesses already. But today, I think they're doing a good job. And I almost feel like this lawyer should have testified to tell the judge that the financial stuff was not actually that big of a deal and nothing seismic was going to happen on June 10th. And maybe the judge wouldn't have even let that stuff in. Doubtful. I think he was going to let it in, but pretty uneventful day overall. I think, I don't think a lot was proven, but again, I think the defense is ahead. When they start ahead and I've already got reasonable doubt, they just shouldn't screw it up. And that's what I'm worried about Alec Murdoch. I've already put some comments on the screen though, people saying he's got to explain why he was at the kennel, why he lied about it. So the only way to convince those people would be to take the stand and for them to believe you. But let me just tell you, Alec, those people that want that question answered or they're going to convict you, they already think you're guilty, and taking the stand is not going to change their mind. That would be my advice. Leah McCray, did you see Tinsley pass the prosecution a note twice? I did not see this, but I did see some comments on Twitter and a lot of people wrote to me DM stuff like that about this. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think if the defense would have objected, the judge may have told him not to. He is a lawyer. He was a witness. They're allowed to sit in on this case. If the judge is going to allow him to pass notes, then the judge is going to allow him to pass notes. This is kind of a judge by judge rule. And that has absolutely happened to us before as well. People passing us notes. If there's a witness sitting in there, if there's somebody from our office sitting in there, if there's a family member of the defendant or, you know, somebody there to help the defendant or the plaintiff, depending on where we're sitting in the case, it's not just objectively illegal, unlawful or unethical. Kayla. All right. We're going to get into now rapid fire questions. So get your questions in. If you have it, hit that subscribe button if you guys haven't already, and follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Tragos Law. I've been tweeting throughout this trial a lot more than I've ever tweeted in my life. And we're really getting into some decent conversation there, even though Twitter's a little bit more of a, you know, kind of like a back alley place. You got to have your dukes up all the time on Twitter. It's not like Instagram or even YouTube where people seem to be a little more cordial. People get fired up on Twitter, but it's all in good fun. So give me a follow on there if you guys haven't already, but also subscribe to the YouTube channel. That's where we do the bulk of our stuff here. Kayla, isn't cross-examination based off questions asked on direct? It's based on the scope of direct, but also you are allowed to, at that point, ask questions that are relevant to the trial and things that have come out if you believe this witness has knowledge. So that's pretty wide leeway. And the rest of your question is, so wouldn't the defense just not ask anything about that and then object to outside the scope of direct? Thanks for bringing clarity to this topic. Not necessarily, because then it can also go to the witness's credibility and they can show bias and they can show how the witness knows about things and how, like, if I asked you a question about, let me try to see how I can do this. Were you at the kennels at 8:50? No, I was not. Let's say that's the only question they ask. Were you at the kennels at 8:49? It's the only question they asked. And then they sat down. I think I can make an argument that where he was all the way leading up to 8:44 when we heard him on that video, the fact that he has already lied to everybody else saying he was never at the kennels, but we know he was at 8:44. I think we can get into all his GM car data because he was saying he was driving here, driving at this speed, whatever. So were you driving at 8:49? Because your car wasn't started at 8:49. Let's look at the GM data to prove that your car, you weren't in your car at 8:49. Your cell phone wasn't moving around, no steps until 9:02. So just that one question that I wasn't there at 8:49 can really open up the door for a good lawyer to say all of this is within the scope of that one question. So it's really hard for them to just ask one or two questions and not open up cross-examination with a pretty wide scope. Hopefully that was not too confusing and you got my examples. Be kind. Do you think through all of this, the judge has been biased toward the prosecution? I feel that. Can explain why I'm wrong if I am. Thanks for your great streams. I don't like saying judges are biased, but I definitely think he has a prosecution lean, but that may also just be coming in the form of a lean against Alec Murdoch. Dana, Peter, how much doubt is reasonable doubt? Great question. I have suspicions about his guilt, but don't feel the state has gone beyond giving me suspicion. So beyond a reasonable doubt first has to be something you are resolute in. You feel like this happened. It is not a possibility. It is not a probability. It is not more likely that it happened. It is not the best explanation of what happened. It has to be proven to you that this happened. And a reasonable doubt is something that is reasonable, not something that is possible, not something that is just speculative and off the wall and throwing everything against the wall to see what sticks. A reasonable doubt that a lot of lawyers like to use in if I walked into this courtroom today and I was wearing this suit and I had water all over myself, and the state was trying to prove to you how I got that water on me, and they were saying that it's raining outside and I had to walk in from my car, and they have the weather forecast that shows that it's raining outside. You can open the window and show that it's raining. The prosecutor is also wet. Everybody that walked in the courtroom has an umbrella. They're proving to you that my suit is all wet because I walked in from the car in the rain. Now, if the defense comes up and says, oh, no, 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 what happened was a fighter jet was driving on top of me, and right when they got above me, there was a fuel leak, and this is fuel all over my my suit. It's possible. It's not impossible. Jets fly above us. They have fuel leaks. Could have happened. But is that reasonable? Is that really reasonable? Now, the defense said this. I actually had an umbrella. But a truck drove by, hit a puddle, splashed it up all over me, which is why my hair's not wet, but my suit is. Now that's a reasonable explanation. That could be potentially a reasonable doubt. And the state would have to show that, no, your hair is wet or whatever. And you get it. It kind of is, it can be a back and forth like that. And when reasonable doubts come up, the state needs to dispel them and prove their theory that it happened the way that they said it happened. There should not be a more plausible explanation. There shouldn't be other reasonable explanations. The state has to get rid of every reasonable explanation. Some long answers tonight already, because these are really good questions. And we do Vordire for hours on this, on what is actually considered reasonable. And once a reasonable doubt is there, if the state can't get rid of it, if you think, wow, that is pretty reasonable, a truck drove by and splashed the water all over him, it's not guilty. Even if you think, well, there's a pretty good chance that the rain did. I mean, everybody else is wet from the rain. But he did have his umbrella. So, you know, and that's how you have to work through it. If there is a single reasonable doubt, and it doesn't even have to be a reasonable explanation, it can just be that, well, here, look, in the weather forecast, there was an hour that it wasn't raining. And that's when he normally gets to court. That could be a reasonable doubt. There's lots of things that could create a reasonable doubt. KJ, do you think Alex is putting pressure on his attorneys to testify? If he does testify, I do think it's going to be Alex's decision. Carsto, hi, Peter. Can AM be retried if there's a hung jury? Is it the same as losing? It's definitely not the same as losing. Yes, he can be retried. You're awesome, by the way. Thank you, Carsto. So are you. The state can retry him. They don't have to, but it's not like double jeopardy if it's a hung jury. EJ, watching from Cracker Barrel in South Carolina on our way back home from Florida to New York. Yes, we just missed each other in Orlando. We were in the same city at the same time, though. Did a drive by a Moselle. It was strange. What would the prosecution have to show to get you to guilty? I'm at a hung jury, not guilty. I just think Sled dropped the ball too much. I don't think the prosecutors could have enough. I really don't. I mean, if they could maybe get like, oh, his phone, we got the location services of it, and he was at that kennel from 8:44 until 9:02 when he left or whatever, I would say that would probably be enough. If they showed that he was there from the whole time all the way till 9:02 when he got in his car, that would probably be enough if they had something like that. Even that's got holes, but that would be tougher to kind of explain away with the phone usage and stuff like that. Jennifer Swain, Alex said there was a 300 blackout replacement. Buster testified he knew nothing about it. So where is it? It's missing. We the jury. I think Alex needs to take the stand at this point to explain why he lied about being at the kennels. Do you think that would be too much risk? Yes, I think it would be too much risk. Because what's he going to say, right? If I already believe him, he's going to say I was there at 8:44. Right after that, 8:45, 8:46, I left, went back, got changed, whatever, got my phone because I left my phone at the house, then got in the car at 9:02 and left. So that leaves, if he left at 8:46, a couple minutes, we know they were still alive. Maggie's checking text at 8:49. Both of their phones locked for the last time around 8:49. So that's when the murders probably occurred. So Alec was gone by 8:46. Are you going to believe that if you already don't? I don't think you are. Not you, but anybody. John, if AM demands to testify over his attorney's advice, can the lawyers disclose we advise him not to testify, or is that a privileged communication? No, they would not be able to disclose that. Now, I saw this comment earlier. So Shroom Felt is a lawyer. Can't call witnesses to commit perjury. That's correct. Putin, Jim know the truth of what happened. If either direct examine him on actual innocence, ethically, that raises all kinds of issues. You're making some assumptions there. You're assuming that they know what happened, number one. Number two, you're assuming that they know he did this. What if he told them that exact story? He left at 8:56. And what if they believe him and they put him on the stand to explain that? No ethical concerns there. And I think that's what would happen. I think they believe whatever story he's telling them at this point. Now, whether it's just that they want to believe it or that it's true or whatever, but I think they're going to believe whatever story they put on with him. Heidi, hey, Peter, watch you on Megyn Kelly. Very cool. Do you believe nobody else in the firm knew anything illegal was going on? I don't believe that. I don't believe that. And I think I'm going back on Megyn Kelly again this week to talk about this case. We don't talk anything politics. We just stick to the law stuff. Because you guys know I don't like getting into politics on either side. But Megyn Kelly's cool. And, you know, we talked about this case and it was a fun discussion. So I'm probably going to go back on this week. I think tomorrow. Monica, Vecchione. The kennel video only matters if they can prove time of death was 8:49, and I'm not convinced that it was. Maybe they were held at gunpoint and killed later. Very true. And again, they have not proven time of death, and that's stuff the state really has to prove. Kim, do you see this like sports since you're a lawyer? Haha. You know, it's funny you say that because I always talked about how I loved sports. I was a good athlete, not a great athlete. I wasn't great at any one sport, but I could kind of play every sport. And I was never good enough to make it to the professional level of sports, obviously. And I kind of feel like this is my version of professional sports trial law. It gets that adrenaline pumping. You're under the bright lights, a lot of practice for the game time. Beverly, the defense witnesses have been unflappable, completely different style than the state's. Defense's answers seem rooted in fact compared to the emotion laid in state witnesses. Reminds me of Dr. Curry versus Dr. Hughes and Depp v. Heard. Interesting. I definitely think the defense experts have seemed way better. I just don't think they're scoring a ton of points for the defense. Ella B., the state has not put the guns in Alex's hands for me. I agree. Just because he was there at 8:44 doesn't prove he did anything. I agree. He's an awful human being who steals but does not make him a murderer. I agree. A lot of I agrees there. T-Mac, wait, didn't MM complain that AM was the one they called all the time? She called someone else first. Who does she usually call? Everybody has confirmed he's the one they call. I don't think that's an inconsistency. D, is this the same Barbara he told the police he bought pills from a long time ago in the interview he did rehab with Jim and Poot? No, I don't think so. Sue, Alex said in his rehab video, Miss Mixon sold him drugs. Seriously? Was that her first name is Barbara? I just put Miss Mixon. Oof. Man, I don't remember that. That's wild. Diane, wish Alex would show up in court with the missing outfit. Oh my gosh. Would that be amazing? That had never crossed my mind. That would be amazing. Rollerbot, I agree. Best cross. He didn't badger her and he let the jury decide how to take their testimony. Kyrie, watch James from court on YouTube. He says a lot of interesting facts about what he sees in the courtroom. He is there in person. I will have to check him out. Carolyn, why are they asking the witness how much they're being paid? They're trying to make it seem like they're biased. You're getting paid $200, $300, $400, $600 an hour to come and testify for the defense. Obviously, you're going to say whatever is good for them. We talked about this a lot in other trials about how you guys think. And for the most part, you have said, you can let me know if you disagree with this in the comments, because I ask this question all the time to other experts and people ask it to my experts. How much do you discount their testimony when you, I mean, I have some experts that make $1,000, $1,200 an hour, $10,000 a day to come and testify. And I always wonder, how do jurors think about that? You guys, for the most part, have said, I don't hold that against them. It's their job, especially doctors that are getting taken out of the OR or dealing with new patients. Nancy Mercer, welcome to the membership crew. Agape forever. I think the defense has proven reasonable doubt, in my humble opinion, although he's messed up. Katrina, where was MM's car? Do we know? Because if it was at the house, AM would have known MM was still there and went back to get her to see his mom, since that was why he asked them to come. I don't know where her car was. It seems like her car was not there. It seems like they said Paul drove her over. If I'm remembering correctly, this trial has lasted so long. Some of the facts are already getting foggy. I can only imagine what it's like for the jury. But he knew she was still there. I don't think he ever said, like, I thought she wasn't there. I just think he thought she didn't want to come because we've heard testimony that a lot of times she didn't want to come. Emily, Snapchat lied. Dogs not barking like a stranger nearby. Spontaneous argument. Paul fell into or grab at the gun, pushing the gun down, the butt down, and thrusting the barrel up explains the angle. This is a theory. If you think the state has proven that beyond a reasonable doubt, sounds like your vote would be guilty. Jay, even though the state did a bad job, possibly to help a Murdaugh again, what they didn't find was more important than what they did. Only person was AM. Tiffany, my biggest point is I need that explanation for the lie, but my mind is not made up. If I was a juror, that's what I'm waiting for. Totally fair. Totally fair. And that would be the reason to call him, I guess. Laura, thinking AM is not guilty. Just so many questions I want answered. I can't see voting guilty because you have a question as to why he was at the kennels. Lying does not equal murder. NCRN, Peter, state takes three. Was does it so defense info gets lost due to trial fatigue? Do you think that's planned by the state? I'm tired, so they have to be checked out. So do I think that the state took a long time, just kind of bore the jury? No, because they usually hold that against the party that takes a long time. Kangi Cosmos, I went back over the prosecution's car steps timeline admitted into evidence. They have Maggie's phone with steps at the same time they have Alex Suburban driving, but no steps on Alex's phone at the time. I agree. Not only that, but they have no corresponding steps together with those two phones ever. So I'm saying there are holes everywhere here. Major holes. Kelly, it was raining. If Maggie's phone was along the road all night, would it be possible there would be some water damage important such? Yeah, but it seems like they got a lot of info on it and they never made that argument. I'm not going to assume. Somebody else posted earlier the Netflix documentary added a lot of context. Well, maybe it does, but it shouldn't. Like, we shouldn't need context from a Netflix documentary, which has no rules of evidence, no rules of admissibility or credibility of evidence. They just put what's a good story in there. So, I mean, I'll watch that after. I don't want that to give me context in how I look at this trial. Esme, crazy to think that everything now is tracking us. I mean, in an insane way. Chrissy, I always look forward to your tweets during the trial every day. Thoughtful insight. I've got those tweet notifications on. Yes. Get there. Comment on the tweets. Let me know what you think. It's usually questions or comments or just one little thing to get the conversation started. You know, it's not long explanations. I save those for the recap. IV push. In closing, will the judge put a time limit on closing? They probably agree to some time limit. I don't know what it is at this point. I haven't heard it. Jamie, in closing, can defense use that time to explain why AM was at the kennel just before the murder? They can try, but if they're going too much into facts, not in evidence, the state can object. Rob, Peter, let's hear your assessment of anxiety level if Alex does take the stand. 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest. Also, who's doing direct with all the personal relationships with his own attorneys? My anxiety level is a 0. I couldn't care less if Alec Murdoch takes the stand. If he was my client, it would be an 11 because of how he is. I think Jim Griffin would do the direct. I would be surprised if it was anybody but Jim Griffin. KWNY Upstate. It is reasonable that one of many people he stole from got some revenge. Isn't that reasonable doubt? Why have a trial then? Could be, although a lot of that stuff wasn't common knowledge yet. Allen charge coming if hung jury? I would assume so. Murder OT in Indiana on. Don't know what that second part meant. D-Lo, would pay money to watch a debate between Poot and Rudy Giuliani. I would pay money to watch Poot debate with no rules. It seems like he likes to push the boundaries. Azam, rebuttal. What's your thought? Oh, the state's rebuttal. I don't know. Are they going to call Cousin Eddie? At this point, I don't think they have much to rebut. If I'm being honest, right now, I don't think they have a ton to rebut. Maybe they call Miss Shelley again to rebut some of Miss Mixon's stuff, but I don't know. Tracy, are the leaks that he's testifying simply to throw off the prosecution? They've been doing a lot of gamesmanship throughout, so it would not surprise me one bit. One bit. Now, if this guy was not a lawyer and didn't already talk to the cops 5 times, I would say there's no way, 0 shot he testifies. But I think there is just a sliver of a chance that he testifies. I would put it at less than 10% chance that he testifies, but that's a non-zero chance. CC Cooper, if Alex is found innocent, he wouldn't be found innocent. He'd be found not guilty. Can he be retried on a conspiracy to commit murder? Technically and theoretically, I think it's possible, but so very unlikely that this would happen. And if it did, I would call all of these state witnesses who said, oh, before you testified, it had to be Alec Murdoch. One guy, two guns. That's what everybody said before. So now they're changing all of their testimony. I would impeach every witness that said it was Alec Murdoch that pulled the trigger and that did this. Which, if you listen, not a ton of them even said he pulled the trigger. Wild. Pulled them drugs. That's interesting. Now, they are pain pills, okay? So maybe she just gave him some of her pain pills. Not that it makes it right. We have an epidemic. We're talking about it at this conference. A lot of lawyers fighting against that in Florida and across the country. It's really hard to fight the opioid epidemic. But lawyers are doing their best to do it. A lot of money, not a lot of good at the end of the tunnel at this point. But just want to throw that in there. Patrick Mott, so glad you're back tonight. Do the YouTube stuff, everyone. Yes, please subscribe, like, follow me on Instagram and Twitter. John, would you let the YouTube crew know when you are going on other shows and when? Thanks, my guy. Yes, I don't know if people like that or if it feels like braggy or bragging or whatever. A lot of it is what I talk about on this show too. I give you guys the prime material, the first go. And I use a lot of what you say, and a lot of your questions are what frame the context when I talk on other shows, because I know what the people want to hear. I know what questions the people have because you guys are the people. So when I'm on the show, the other shows, I know that I am going to go on Megyn Kelly again on Thursday. I may do some law and crime stuff in the future, but it seems like it's behind a paywall, which doesn't make me real excited because I want you guys to be able to be there and see it. But yeah, if I feel like they have interesting things to talk about, I'll usually go on. I'm talking to some other shows too about potentially going on. Timing hasn't worked, but I will try to let you know, John. I appreciate you saying that. Summer, thoughts on this not being a fair trial with the state going so long and the jury now being tired when his defense is turned? Seems the defense has to rush now. No, I don't think so. And I don't think they have to rush. I think the judge would let them stay there as long as it takes to get this trial done. Usually that's how it is with defendants' cases in chief. Johanna, thank you for your input. Love it. 205K and growing. Yes. Let's keep growing. Meggie Shea, the Snapchat video state's timeline making more sense, knowing he can be a totally different person to everyone, among things that make him guilty for me. Yeah, a lot of you commented like literally propensity evidence on my tweet. And I was like, that's exactly what's not allowed. Saying he could steal money from one of his closest friends who's dying of colon cancer, does that make him a horrible person with no moral compass? I think it's arguably yes. But it does not make him a murderer. And for you to say that, well, if he's capable of that, he's capable of murder. That's literally saying he has the propensity to commit crimes because he's a generally bad guy. And that is exactly what the law does not allow to come in as this evidence and why we are so careful about letting other bad acts come in. Thank you, Jeanette, for the super sticker. Cerebellum, have a blessed Lenten season. Paul says, for by grace, you have been saved through faith. And this is not from you, but is a gift of God. It is not from works. So that no one may boast. When you said Paul, I was thinking Paul Murdoch, not Paul from the Bible. But thank you. Michelle, previous prosecutor. Awesome. Shocked there aren't more objections, especially when the defense mentioned AM would be going to prison regardless. Improper jury nullification argument. Unimpressed with the lawyering. Michelle, I don't know what jurisdiction you're in, but my dad just tried a case in North Carolina where in that jurisdiction, the jury was allowed to know that what the penalty was. In Florida, where I'm at, you're not allowed to tell the jury that. I discussed this kind of on the other one, on another video, but they're letting tons of stuff fly and the judge is letting a ton of stuff fly. That's what's been interesting to me. I think there have been some good lawyering and some bad lawyering. Googie Grant, right now AM has a 50-50 chance of getting off. If he takes the stand and whines, he loses his chance of not being convicted. Lord Zero, hey, Peter, it's frustrating to see so many people want proof of the defense when that isn't their burden. I agree with you. The state hasn't proven anything concretely. That's why I'm saying I don't think the defense is doing a ton, but they're already ahead after the state's case in chief. And if they're ahead, that means they win. I mean, the state's got to be way ahead. T Sky, does the state not have money to get good experts? It was absolutely. On a case like this, you don't even want to know how much money they spent on a case like this. Terry, if he does testify, do you think the jury would believe anything he says at this point? Exactly my point. They may just think he's a liar, so why take the chance? One thing the state has proved beyond a reasonable doubt is that he's a liar. The defense was about willing to stipulate to it. Eleanor, I think Alex, with his dishonesty, theft, deceit, is 100% responsible for the deaths, but my God, please prove it. Today, I'd still have to go not guilty, even though I think he has blood on his hands. Again, I think this, as much as you guys hate it, and I feel like people get frustrated with me feeling this way, because this is kind of how I feel too, but we cannot allow, because we think he's a bad guy, that means he did everything people accused him of, exactly what that lawyer said today, who is really pissed at him. He's really pissed at him, but he's saying that doesn't mean he did this. Virginia, props to your wife who approves your shirts. This one I got at a golf course that I was golfing at. This was all me. Kangi Cosmos, but my wife is way more of a fashionista than I am. Welcome. Seen you in the comments a bunch, so I'm glad you joined. Melanie Meadows is a name we've heard a lot. Laura, you are in trouble if you haven't watched Eric Allen, LOL. I'm at a conference and still listening to this trial in one earbud during the boring times when I have certain time to watch it. So hey, give me some grace here. I'm doing a lot of things at once. Stephanie Coker, how are lawyers fighting the opioid epidemic? They are suing manufacturers, advertisers, doctors for how they prescribe it, how they're talking to people, how they're getting people addicted. we are in this battle now. You can look it up on what personal injury plaintiffs' lawyers are doing to try to fight the opioid epidemic. It's a tough battle. There's a lot of money behind it fighting Big Pharma. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. I don't personally handle those cases, so I don't want to say I'm on the front lines, but a lot of the guys speaking and gals speaking in these firms here, they are doing a lot of work to try to help that situation. Sydney, do defense attorneys commonly give false ironclad alibis to media like Alex's attorneys have done in print, in interviews, and on HBO? I want to say no to this, but I don't know exactly what you're referencing. No, they don't give false alibis. Attorneys do not commonly give false alibis. I also messaged Lemon P earlier to get you a sponsorship. This is hilarious. That would be hilarious if that happened. Lisa, how likely will an appeal overturn if he's found guilty because of the bad acts? Does that mean a retrial? Yes, it would mean a retrial. I mean, appeals are never likely, but again, I'd give it in that 10% range. Bev Taylor, high probability this jury has been bought and paid. The jurors all know or have association with the Murdaughs. No one is talking about this. Low country, South Carolina equals pay to play quid pro quo. I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm going to find that out because if they vote not guilty, I think there's plenty of reasonable doubt in this case. It's kind of like if Alec doesn't testify, we'll never know if this was all just gamesmanship or if they were actually considering it. EJ, can anyone go in and watch any court case? Usually, yes. Sometimes they do limit who can be in there for certain reasons. Ayana, Peter, if AM took the stand, what do you think will be the nail in the coffin questions other than why he lied about being at the scene? Why no blood on you if you touched them? Did you really, where did you touch to take their pulse? I would go into such detail about turning him over, touching his phone, taking their pulse, everything he said he did at the scene. In 20 seconds, how'd you do that? Where were you from 844 to 849? Where were you from 849 to 902? Why were you speeding on the way there? All the details and inconsistencies and stuff that we all have questions about, there would be a lot of nails potentially in the coffin if he took the stand. I mean, if I was a prosecutor, this would be an amazing opportunity to cross-examine Murdaugh in this case. Emily, do you think the lawyers watch podcasts to help them? I don't know. They've referenced YouTube a bunch. They've referenced Twitter. They've retweeted articles. I don't know. I don't know. I would say yes. Probably not this one. They probably watch the bigger ones like Emily Baker's show. TB, prosecution should have fought this case when they had a case. SLED should have done their job. That's what I think. And the prosecutor should have put him in prison for the rest of his life for the financial crimes and what he did to his clients and his partners. Linda Wines, welcome to the membership crew. All right. Yeah, somebody just said, where's the class action lawsuit? More class action lawsuits coming. It's basically when you charge the jury that they should come together and make a decision. Victoria, maybe he took their pulse before he left. I don't think that would be a good explanation. I don't. All right. So thanks for joining me again tomorrow night. The schedule's getting a little weird. I think I have a dinner meeting tomorrow night at like 8:15 or something. So I may be going earlier around 6 o'clock. If you have other streams to watch, I get it. Stick to your schedule, stick to your plan, come watch ours after. Make sure you get in the comments, get in the chat. If you guys can join me earlier, again, I think it's going to be 6:15, 6:30, something like that. Come join me then. I'd love to talk about it more with you. I appreciate every single person that's in the chat, every single person that watches, every single person that subscribes. You guys make this a lot more fun, a lot more educational because it's tough topics. It's sad topics. We deal with heavy things on here. So I appreciate all of you. I'm speaking, in the 7 o'clock hour tomorrow morning. So say a prayer for me that things go well there. It's going to be a topic. It's going to be fun. I'm doing it with a good buddy of mine, Jason McIntosh, another lawyer in town here. If you guys know him, go get on his social medias. Law and Lumber, need a weekend. Let's do this. Yes, I want to golf. Golf, 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 golf. I used to have so much more time for golf when I was better, Rob, when I could have spanked you. Now you could probably have a chance to beat me. I don't want that to happen. Don't practice, okay? Just don't practice. Work. Work really hard. Build stuff in your woodworking station and go win some cases. Penny Christopoulos, sounds like we're kin. Getting this South Carolina verbiage and language going, right? All right, I appreciate y'all. You all is usually what I say. I try to avoid saying y'all. All right, you guys are the best. Yes, charity golf tournament. We're still in the works here. I'm out of here. Hit that like button on the way out. See everybody tomorrow. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Lawyer You Know podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, which I hope you did, here's what to do next. Give it a share, rate, and review the show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, and make sure you subscribe to the show in the listening app of your choice. Follow me on all social media platforms at Tragos Law and join the Lawyer You Know YouTube channel and community where you can ask me questions live on all of these cases. If you've got an idea for a specific topic or you have a personal legal question on an injury case, whether it's a car accident, trip and fall, wrongful death, or catastrophic injury case, please email me at lawyeryouknow@gmail.com. All of these links I just mentioned are included in the show notes section of this episode. So until next time, I'm Peter Tragos.